The second patient presented by Dr. Hart was also diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, which is the most common lymphoma subtype and is considered a, quote, aggressive form of the disease compared to more indolent subtypes like follicular lymphoma. This 65-year-old woman initially presented with difficulty breathing.
She presented to her physician with some respiratory symptoms, shortness of breath, was found to have a large pleural effusion and also a mediastinal mass.
And pleural effusion being sort of fluid around the lung,
right.
Mediastinal mass inside the center of the chest.
Correct. There's large numbers of lymph nodes there, and many cancers, including lung cancers, breast cancer, other cancers, can spread to those lymph nodes and make them enlarged. Lymphomas can certainly do that too. So that's one of the diagnoses that is considered a lot when a patient presents like this. Obviously, another common diagnosis that would do this would be a lung cancer.
So these are the lymph nodes kind of around the bronchus and the lung and the heart in the middle of the chest.
Right. And that is a serious place to have involvement because obviously they can press on either the airway passages or they could press in the blood vessel leading to the heart, or they can actually get into the sac around the heart, which is called the pericardium, and collect fluid there too.
And when you first saw her, what kind of condition was she in?
She was having some respiratory symptoms. She had already undergone what's called a thoracentesis, where a needle is put into the pocket of fluid to drain it out.
And that's sort of in the side of the chest?
Yes, it's put through the chest wall into this pocket of fluid. Sometimes you can take out a liter or 2 liters of fluid, and the patients will usually feel better very quickly after that because then their lung on that side has more room to expand. You can exchange more air, and you feel instantly better. So she was feeling somewhat better from that because I think that fluid collection what was causing most of her symptoms.
And how did you approach her treatment or her workup at that point?
We referred her to the thoracic surgeons, which are the chest surgeons that are expert in doing operations. Lymphomas are almost never cured with an operation, but we sometimes will do small operations to try and make a definitive diagnosis. It's very important with lymphomas that you have big enough biopsies so that the pathologist can classify the different types of lymphomas.
And what happened?
Well, they went in and did what's called a mediastinoscopy and did a biopsy of some of those lymph nodes. And that showed that this was what's called a diffuse large cell lymphoma, which is a common type of lymphoma. The large cell just means that it was an aggressive type lymphoma.
So that was similar to what you described for Mr. S.
That's correct. This is the same general type of lymphoma, which is it's one of the two most common types of lymphoma that medical oncologists deal with.
So did she have it anywhere else in her body?
She did have some lymph nodes in other places that you could see. She had some in the periaortic region, which is down in the upper part of the abdomen near the aorta or the large blood vessel there. So she had some involvement in those areas too.
And so you saw those on the scans?
Right. Those were seen on the scans. Those were not biopsied. Usually we biopsy the most important site or the most accessible site, and then we look at the other sites and try and check them with scans.
And did you do a bone marrow biopsy in her?
Yeah, she did have a bone marrow biopsy done, and hers was felt to be negative.
So what kind of therapy did you think about for her and discuss with her?
Well, I decided with her to give her the Rituxan antibody and also a regimen called CHOP, C-H-O-P, which was very similar to what was given to Mr. S. In her case, she was a younger woman. I felt that she had certainly a bulkier, more potentially life-threatening lymphoma, so she needed to get basically the full court press.
What do you usually see in terms of side effects with CHOP? Certainly that's a very common, maybe the most common form of chemotherapy and lymphoma, and also Rituxan.
Well, with Rituxan, the main side effects that we see are related to the infusion, commonly with the first one. It does not tend to cause effects later on, but you certainly can get fevers or chills. Depends a little bit how much is the burden of cancer in the body. The more cancer the patient has when they start, the more likely they are to get effects. A patient that has a lot of lymphoma cells in their bloodstream is obviously going to get a much higher chance of a reaction. So often in those patients, we will give them just the chemotherapy first and come back with the Rituxan once we have killed off quite a bit of the cancer cells. So Rituxan is otherwise very easy to tolerate aside from that. So we run it in very slowly for the first treatment over about 6 hours. We can sometimes shorten it to 4 hours for subsequent treatments.
When they have these kinds of reactions, sort of how bad are they?
They usually will respond to slowing down or stopping the Rituxan. We will sometimes give the patient some medication with a drug like Benadryl, some Tylenol. Occasionally, we will need to use some corticosteroids, something like, there are several different drugs that can be given that are sort of prednisone-type drugs, too. So it's rare to have a patient who absolutely cannot take Rituxan. I've had two in my career that I absolutely could not get any Rituxan in, even under, you know, putting them in the hospital and dripping it in very, very slowly. But that's a rare exception. The degree of reaction can be, if you're not used to it, can sometimes be very scary to the patients, sometimes to the nurses and physicians. But since the drug is so widely used now, I think most oncologists and most oncology nurses are aware of this and are able to deal with it now.
Now, is it true that usually by the time the patient goes home, they feel fine?
Yes, absolutely.
And that in general, it tends to stop after maybe one infusion or maybe the second one?
Yes, that's absolutely true. That's why we can almost always go ahead with the second infusion and subsequent infusions a little bit faster.
Now, do you see the same kinds of side effects that you see with chemotherapy, the hair loss, nausea, vomiting, et cetera?
No, Rituxan has essentially no hair loss and no nausea or vomiting because I tell the patients that it is not chemotherapy. It is a targeted agent, which is an antibody to a protein that is on the surface of the lymphocytes. So actually, we don't know exactly all of its mechanisms of action. That's still being worked out. But it does target the cancer cells and may help the immune system recognize the cancer cells better to get rid of them.
You mentioned before sort of how the treatment of lymphoma has evolved and particularly how things change when people started to utilize rituximab, and I guess that was really in the 90s. What did you sort of observe as you started to add that into your treatment with the chemotherapy?
I just observed a lot more patients being in complete remission after we finished, say, six cycles of CHOP chemotherapy.
In other words, the tumor going away.
Yes. So a lot more patients that had no evidence of cancer at that time. And so I think it's one of those innovations that I think the studies came out, the drug was released. Once practicing doctors started working with it, it probably took it just a few months to become basically, at least in America, the absolute standard treatment. This is one where the drug was good enough that the doctors, I think, even leaped ahead of what the studies had shown because they felt this does not add a lot of side effects. It really boosts the effect of the treatment.
And not to get too far off on a tangent, but a lot of patients, such as basically the first two that we've talked about so far, receive chemotherapy plus rituximab. What about using Rituxan alone without chemotherapy?
That is done quite frequently for patients with the slower growing types of lymphomas. The diffuse large cell lymphoma, which is the most common type of aggressive lymphoma, in general can certainly be helped by Rituxan alone, but it is too aggressive lymphoma to be permanently cured with the Rituxan treatment alone. Remember, one of the paradoxes that I try to explain to patients with lymphomas is that the slower growing lymphomas are almost never cured, whereas the aggressive lymphomas put your life at risk, but you can often cure them also.
So these first two patients really fit into that category of having the aggressive tumor where hopefully you'll be able to cure them. If not, it's a big problem, whereas the more indolent ones that you were talking about, even if you don't cure them, the patients may do well for a very long period of time.
They may do well for many, many years, and if they're an older patient, I tell them that if we can control this, even if we can't cure it, you may be able to live out your normal life expectancy.
Getting back to Mrs. M, can you talk about how she tolerated the treatment and what happened in terms of the tumor?
She tolerated the treatment very, very nicely. She did not require any hospitalizations. She is much different than Mr. S. He's sort of a quiet and reserved person. She's much more open about things and will come in and feel free to complain about anything she wants to in the office and does not keep anything back. So that was refreshing to deal with also. But she did quite well with her treatment. She had the expected hair loss. She did not have very significant problems with nausea. Her blood counts did decline some with her treatment. We did use some of the growth factor support in her treatment. We have drugs now which will boost up the white blood cell and the red blood cell count, and they're commonly used. There's one's called Neupogen or Neulasta, and there's one called Procrit, which is commonly used for red blood cells. Those have also been one of the major breakthroughs in cancer treatment in the last 15 years or so, where we can now support these patients so they, even if their white count declines, and I tell the patients, especially on CHOP chemotherapy, it will decline unless you use shots not to keep it up.
What happened to the tumor?
Her tumor did very, very well, and we got a CAT scan after two or three cycles that showed a great improvement. And she completed her six cycles, and follow-up CAT scans done since that time, this is about a year and a half or 2 years ago now, continue to show no evidence of recurrent disease. With these aggressive lymphomas, I usually tell patients that if you are cancer-free at the three-year mark from the treatment, that there's a reasonable chance, a very good chance, that you're going to stay free of cancer.
Now, can a patient have completely normal scans and yet still have the cancer come back?
That can certainly happen. There is no scan that can find one cancer cell or 10 cancer cells or 100 cancer cells. So the only absolute test is the test of time. And I always try to explain that to patients, that if they're looking at me feeling well a certain number of years after diagnosis, then at least in the large cell lymphomas, we can give them a reasonable guarantee that they're going to stay free of cancer.
How did you see Ms. M sort of responding emotionally, coping with this situation?
My impression of her was that she did well and tolerated things. Well, she has a very close family. As I said, she's very close with her daughter and her son-in-law. I think that she tolerated things well. I'm sure that there were things that she wanted to do that she couldn't. But as a physician, there wasn't that much that I recall her talking about as being devastatingly bad side effects. So I think that she went through things and tolerated things pretty well, because she also had, in a different way from Mr. S, she also had some good emotional strength.
How did both of these patients sort of recover from chemotherapy? You talked about, you know, football players missing a season. How long did it take Ms. M to sort of get back on her feet from what you could tell?
Several months. I think it took her several months to get back to things. I mean, I usually tell them, as your hair is growing back, your energy level will be recovering too. So think of it coming along at the same time. Your hair grows about an inch a month, and your energy level is going to be increasing up over that amount of time. Most patients are somewhat anemic after they finish their treatment. It's important for patients to understand that it takes a while for this to happen. It takes a while for the body to recover. Sometimes it can be upsetting to patients if they think, well, I finished my chemotherapy and life goes on now, I should be ready to go. They have to give themselves time to recover from that.
I'm curious about the spectrum of the types of cancers that you treat in your practice, and where sort of lymphoma fits in terms of, is it a rare cancer for you to see? Is it as common as some of the more well-known ones, such as breast cancer? How often do you see lymphoma patients?
We see quite a bit of it. It is not the most common cancer by any means. It's certainly not in the, you know, big four of cancers like breast and lung and colon and prostate, which are the ones, you know, the most common adult serious cancers. Lymphomas have been going up in their incidence in the last 10 years or so, as opposed to some other cancers which have been declining. We're not sure why that is. Most lymphoma patients do get referred in at some point to see a medical oncologist. So I think as a medical oncologist, we do see almost every patient in town who has a diagnosis of lymphoma, whereas we don't necessarily always see every breast cancer or prostate cancer or patient.
Do you think that most oncologists in practice, such as yourself, who's well-read and keeps up with things, you know, is in as good a position to take care of a patient with lymphoma as somebody at an academic center or university?
I think there's no reason that they should not be. I think the pitfalls that you can run into in private practice taking care of lymphomas, one of the things that can happen, and this can happen in academic places too, and I've been in both camps at various times in my career, is with not having the pathology ascertained and reviewed. So I certainly would tell patients that lymphomas are one of the more difficult pathologic diagnoses, and even very experienced pathologists who look at lymphomas all day long and have done so for 30 years can have differences of opinion about them. So it's gotten a lot better recently with some of the new fancy molecular techniques and things that can be done. Those can be done pretty much at almost any hospital. So I think you need to be sure about the diagnosis, and they need to be sure that they're having high quality radiologic studies done. I think the standard treatments such as the CHOP type chemotherapy and Rituxan, there's no reason for a patient such as that to have to go to an academic center. It's also important to remember that the staging needs to be characterized for all patients, and there is a prognostic index now which a well-trained medical oncologist should be fairly familiar with, several factors that can really help predict what the patient's chance is of being cured with this standard type treatment. And there are patients that will have a better than 50-50 chance of being cured with that. And there are patients that will have a 20% chance of being cured with the same exact treatment. So if the patients turn out to be one of the ones at the low end of that spectrum, then those are patients that should be potentially considered for some type of novel or new type of treatment, or if you want, a clinical trial. I think it's important to assess the patient at the start, but you also need to look at the patient in the fairly early on in their treatment, because these are very aggressive cancers. They should be very responsive to chemotherapy, and almost, I tell patients with lymphomas, we should start to see big changes right away. This is not something that's going to take, you know, 6 months before you see any change. You should see something happening. If you have a palpable lymph node with the first treatment, we should start to see that going down.
Is that what you saw with her?
Yeah, she felt better, you know, right away. She pretty much felt, aside from losing her hair, she felt pretty much back to normal with the first treatment.
What about the role of second opinion, seeing a second oncologist? Where does that fit into oncology practice?
Well, I think any physician should allow their patients, should never discourage a patient from having a second opinion. Now, I tell my patients there's two ways that we can do that. One would be to get a second opinion, which I very frequently do, and I encourage quite a bit, and I do very often, is to get a second opinion on the pathology. And that is easily done and does not usually cost the patient anything themselves, because the pathology specimens are kept, for the most part, permanently and can be easily sent someplace else. So I will often, because of the difficulties with classifying lymphomas, even by very good and competent pathologists, I will often, you know, get a second opinion on the pathology to make sure that people agree, is this a fast or slow-moving type of lymphoma? So that's one thing that can be easily done, and I often do that in general. I think that's always a good idea. And then as far as going for treatment second opinion, I'm certainly very willing to do that, and I always like to tell the patients that over the years of my practice, I've certainly met excellent lymphoma doctors in almost every major city in the United States, and I'd be very happy to pick up a phone and get them there at any time. Some patients, if they are very ill from an aggressive lymphoma, they might not really be in condition to travel. So I would usually tell a patient like that that my recommendation, although I'm certainly willing to send them at any time for a second opinion, but my recommendation would be to take the standard Rituxan plus CHOP type treatment if I think that I have a reasonable chance at taking care of things. If they are looking that it's going to be such a difficult chance, then I will sometimes encourage them to go on a clinical trial at the start. But for a normal risk lymphoma, I think large majority of American oncologists treat them very similarly now, so I think there's not that much difference.